and its endlessly churning winds. "The enemy is just beyond the ridge, High Lord," warned the steward, his military advisor, and, theoretically, his bodyguard. "There is no need to leave the pot. It would be wiser to observe from orbit using the eyes. The Sangheili are fierce and cunning." High Lord McKen gave a dismissive gesture. "I have never been here before, and I will see this world firsthand. I am not without experience in combat. But if you are anxious, steward, I shall be wary. My chair is weaponized, and I have you at hand. Stay close, but do not distract me." "Your orders are a joy to fulfill." The steward held back, adjusting his anti-grav belt and noisily checking his pulse rifle. He seemed a trifle annoyed about being put in his place. The steward was no doubt aware that, with his chair, McKen was better suited to protect the steward than the reverse. Still, McKen was indeed wary of this world, in spite of his bland bravado. He was not terribly comforted by the emplaced force field projectors set up near the pod. They moderated the wind, but would they protect him from attack? He scanned the sky for Sangheili fighter craft as he drifted his chair out the drop pod's airlock. Here he paused, his chair hovering over the blast-scarred stone the pod had landed on, and swayed his long, gold-skinned neck with sinuous aplomb as he gazed curiously about, taking in the striking color contrasts, gust-flailed dunes, and rocky outcroppings of the planet's principal continent. The constantly shifting, shrieking winds were partly a product of the celestial objects that also gave this world its dual coloration. The blue dwarf star hanging in the sky to McKen's left, the much larger red giant sun to his right, both just 45 degrees above opposite horizons. As per the High Lord's orders, the pod had set down right on the purple line so he could appreciate the contrasting views. Hierarch Chanelin had been right to note in his monograph on the planet of red and blue that the remarkable duality of hue along either side of the purple line was one of the wonders of the galaxy. On the left, the outcroppings and dunes were all gradations of blue, the sand lighter blue, the rocks darker. On the right, rugged landscape was entirely red, muted or emphatic, but all the way to the horizon. Only the relatively narrow purple line mixed the colors. The two suns in the binary star system, one closer than the other, were always at the same angle with respect to this motionless world. But there was no night on this side. The planet was prevented from spinning by the interlocking gravitational fields of the two stars. They played an eternal game of push and pull that would someday rip the planet apart. But until then, millennia from now, this world's placement in the galaxy made it of strategic importance to the war effort. Perhaps more important, there were forerunner relics here in this area, and more buried in other parts of the planet. The luminary had confirmed it. The necessity of investigating forerunner relics was the only reason the San Shayum had descended from high orbit to the surface of this world, risking certain confrontation with the armed and dangerous Sangheili. The shaped stones near the pod were the remnants of an ancient city belonging to an extinct species, an unknown biped. But on the jutting stones were carvings that suggested they had a knowledge of the Forerunners, who had been here even earlier than the stone carvers. The densely compact blue sun was in the east. The bigger, sprawling, more diffuse red sun bulked in the west. The planet's winds, urged by the opposed gravity that flexed back and forth, slashed first one way and then another, constantly eroding the stones with a kind of relentless brushing, turning them gradually into dunes that gave off ghostly plumes of dust and sand. Plumes that shifted with the winds, as if doing a primitive dance. The red dancers flitted on one side.